Today, I plan to talk about smart beta ETFs. It's the next wave in financial innovation that's changing the way index funds, or these so-called ETFs, are structured. But before I do that, let's go back in time to see how index investing actually got started. Back in 1960, two students at the University of Chicago came up with an idea of an unmanaged investment company and laid out their model for an index fund. While their idea did not gain much traction back then, it did set the stage for a major innovation in asset management, precisely the world of index funds. A decade later, in 1973, Burton Malkiel, an economist at Princeton University who wrote the best-selling classic A Random Walk Down Wall Street, told the general public what Wall Street already knew, that most mutual funds do not beat market indexes. And specifically, Malkiel wrote, "What we need is a no-load, minimum management fee mutual fund that simply buys the hundreds of stocks making up the broad stock market averages and does no trading from security to security in an attempt to catch the winners." A few years later, in December 1975, the young founder of the Vanguard Group, John Bogle, started the first index investment trust, which tracked the S&P 500, earning contemptuous jeers from Bogle's peers, who called the fund Bogle's folly. Even Fidelity Investments then chairman, the renowned Edward Johnson, said he couldn't believe that the great mass of investors are going to be satisfied with receiving just average returns. But as they say, the rest of the story. According to Vanguard's website, Bogle's index fund, which started out with $11 million in assets, has grown to about $560 billion in assets as of June 2017, and has delivered an annual average rate of return of 11% since its inception, with an expense ratio of only 0.14%, which is 86% lower than funds with similar holdings. That's pretty amazing. Now, the logic of this investing has not been lost on one of the greatest investors of our day, Warren Buffett. Even Buffett, the great investor, showed that he was a strong believer in the fundamental soundness of index funds when he stated the following, quote, "My advice to my trustee couldn't be more simple," he wrote. "Put 10% of the cash in short-term government bonds, 90% in a very low-cost S&P 500 index fund. I believe the trust's long-term results from this policy will be superior to those attained by most managers, whether pension funds, institutions, or individuals who employ high-fee managers." What's fascinating about this is that Buffett does not want his surviving family to be bothered with Wall Street and their active money managers. And although quite a bit will still be invested in Berkshire Hathaway, the excess monies will be directed the way he just described. So, finally, before I move on to talk about smart beta ETFs, let's quickly revisit the concept of active versus passive investing. In active investing, fund managers rely on their own research and insights and attempt to outperform the market by actively trading positions based on various factors that impact a stock's valuation and future prospects. In its quest for higher returns, these active investing managers and their approach results in higher expenses, higher fees and commissions, so investors pay more for the fund. Now, passive investing takes a strictly buy-and-hold view and replicates the holdings of an index, so there's no active research and only a small amount of trading tied to periodically rebalancing the fund to mimic changes in the holdings or weightings of the underlying index. So passive investing therefore has significantly lower expenses and fees. Now, while many index ETFs can be used as a way to grow your retirement savings over the long term, they appear to have become victims of their own success. Here's why. According to CNBC, as of July 2017, there were about $4 trillion invested in ETFs, with a record $250 billion in inflows into ETFs in the first half of 2017 alone. But this huge influx into ETFs can cause problems, as a recent Bank of America report warned. The report, titled "The ETFization of S&P 500," cites that ETFs now own about 37% of the S&P 500's component companies and warns that this could cause severe price distortions, liquidity concerns, and high volatility, especially if one or more of the index's component companies or sectors get into trouble. So the Bank of America report suggests that investors avoid the stocks that make up these components of these indexes for now because these components sport a much higher valuation and very high premiums to their actual intrinsic value. Instead, the report suggests picking up stocks that are not in the major indexes if you want higher long-term returns. That's Bank of America's opinion. In essence, $4 trillion are invested in securities that make up these ETFs, with funds holding large numbers of these shares for the long run, shares they have no interest in selling on a day-to-day basis. So as a result, the true availability of stock to buy and sell, as it's called, the true float of these shares, may have been significantly reduced, and reduced by more than a third. In addition, ETFs have been buying stocks that are in the index without really analyzing or considering whether they're fairly priced, and this may cause a bit of a price bubble in those stocks, potentially setting the stage for a crash in index ETFs as valuations get distorted relative to their fundamentals. In fact, even John Bogle, Vanguard's outspoken founder and the Henry Ford of index funds, believes that there is a point where too much invested in the S&P 500 could be bad for the stock market because of the lack of liquidity I just mentioned and its overpriced shares. Now, there are naysayers that point to Japan, where passive funds own roughly 70% of the equity markets without any real trouble so far. And they believe that 37% in the U.S. is still far from any tipping point. So where do we go from here? Well, over the past few years, some fund managers realized the potential drawbacks of typical structure of passive index ETFs and started setting up so-called smart beta ETFs. And they don't just blindly follow typical index weighting, but consider other factors that influence a share's valuations, factors such as dividends or price-to-book value or volatility. In general, smart beta ETFs attempt to beat the index, enhance returns, reduce risk, and add diversification in a transparent and cost-effective manner. In effect, smart beta ETFs are akin to active investing because they attempt to enhance returns, but their implementation is different. Their implementation is transparent, systematic, and rules-based, and requires little or no discretionary input from portfolio managers. So they have lower fees and higher volume capacity than traditional active strategies. In essence, offering the best of both worlds, the market-beating upside potential of active investing and the transparent low-cost advantages of passive investing. And you know what? They seem to be catching on. As mentioned in the Financial Times, as of December 2016, smart beta ETF funds had $316 billion globally, and projections see these ETF assets reaching $1 trillion by 2020 and $2.4 trillion by 2025. Smart beta ETFs are essentially a free market response to the dominance of traditional ETFs. By joining technology with actively managed strategies, these alternatives are, in effect, actively managed. Looking beneath the surface, however, this active management is not based on human talent, but on formulae and algorithms which fit the ETF structure while simultaneously allowing for the potential enhancement of certain sectors or the inclusion of philosophies such as value investing or growth investing. So, indexing is great, but as with most things in life, too much of a good thing can turn sour, and free markets kick in to provide innovative new solutions. For now, momentum appears to favor this smart approach, but we do not as yet have a long enough history of returns to make meaningful comparisons against traditional ETFs. So, will this new fund evolution be enough to counter the massive demand for S&P 500 funds? Well, only time will tell.